Give us Gonzaga.
Why not?
Give us Gonzaga in an exhibition game. Let's go play in Portland.
Well, you know who doesn't want to play that game?
Gonzaga.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, talk about like nothing to gain, you know.
Well, that's where, yeah, even if the Ducks lose that game, as long as they play with that, because that's a great team.
Oh,
I mean,
that's a
possibly, you know, once in 10 years kind of great team that Gonzaga has up there this year. I'd love that. Without a strong rhyme to step to, think of how many weeks shows you slept through. Time's up. I'm sorry I kept you thinking of this. You keep repeating your miss. The rhyme from the microphone soloist. So you sit by the radio and on the dial soon. As you hear it, pump up the volume. Welcome, everybody, to the Flock Pod, hashtag 066, here in the beautiful condo. We have the Avatarier producers hanging out with us here, hopefully catching a little bit of a nap as we get going so we don't have to edit out too much noise. I'm already thinking like a producer, Shane. I'm already in my head about it. I got my boy Shane here in the condo. Shane, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Doing pretty good. It's good to have, you know, the spring sports coming back. It kind of seems like we're getting into some more normalcy again.
It's almost like that scene in Endgame where Paul Rudd goes to, like, the windows at the end and you can kind of, like, you hear, like, the birds fluttering and things like that. I'm just waiting for the missile to come crashing through and demolish everything again.
But never saw that movie. Yeah.
Get out. I need to find a new podcast partner. Get out. Okay. So you can find us at The Flock Pod on all your major social media platforms. You can find myself at Coach Justin D on the same social media platforms. Shane, tell them where you are.
I am at Shane. Nope, no, I'm not. I'm at Bartender Shane6 on the Twitter and at Waka Flocka Shane6 on the Instagram.
So many Flockas.
Flocka Flocka.
So many Flockas. Big podcast today. Obviously, the men coming up with a big dub last night, which is going to be one of our centerpieces that we'll talk about. As well as we're recording about 1 o'clock here on Friday afternoon. So the women are going to be tipping off against UCLA in just a couple of hours.
Exciting.
But before we get into all of that, we do want to let you know that our partner, WestCoastCFB.com, doing some big things. Made some upgrades to the website. We actually just joined as a podcast right before the podcast started recording. I didn't get as much pre-recorded as I wanted to. I think that was a goal today, but it didn't happen. Anyway!
You can't meet all your goals.
You know, you can't do everything. You can't do everything. So yeah, go check it out if you haven't yet. It's really fun. It's really, really easy to go in and create a profile. I immediately jumped back to, like I was saying, like when I was in high school, the old Oregon Live message boards. It definitely has that kind of a feel. Shane, break it down for us a little bit more.
Yeah, so I mean, now they've kind of expanded, adding these profiles here. You can go in, make your own profile, and then from there, you can go and respond to some of these articles that we're always citing and talking about on the podcast. We've always kind of like done our own rankings for things on the pod as kind of a segment. Now you have that option as well. And then from there, allowing, you know, other members to see your rankings and open up that discussion. Right now, it's pretty open. This is a brand new thing. So if you hop in now, you can be in that first wave. You know, when you get on Twitter, social media site, and you're like, wonder what this was like when it first started.
Early adapter.
Now is that time. Now's the time to get in.
Be an early adapter.
And also, right now, it gives us a great opportunity to make this, you know, fairly duck heavy. Let's get a duck, you know...
It's time to invade.
Stamp.
It's time to invade, Ducks. This is something that, I mean, WestCoastCFB.com is a little bit more of a lot more Husky fans seem to be engaging with the articles and things of that nature. So we want to encourage our Duck fans, our Twitter army, if you will. We need to come up with a name for our fans. We've kind of messed around with this a little bit, but maybe that's something we need to workshop a little
something
bit more.
Something about a pond, maybe.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Pond Army. Ponders.
We'll play with it.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like the nickname thing, like even like Frank Kepnong last night, the idea is to kind of slow roll the nickname.
Yeah, let it come. Let it come naturally. I want to force it. I'm a little impetuous. If you know me well, you know I'm very impetuous. But it's fun. It's right now they've got, you know, ranked the Pac-12 head coaches, best football facilities in the Pac-12. It's very much so interactive and very catered to the user and kind of reliant upon the user. It's it's creating content with content itself.
Yeah, the more that we get our voices on there, the more that it's really this site's going to evolve, the more that this function within the site will really evolve. They do great stuff. The articles are all really awesome. Right now, the news cycle in the football world is slowed down a little bit. We're kind of in that little bit of a dead period, but we do have spring football coming up here right before we know
it's so close.
Yeah,
it's so close.
So now's the time to get in, make your profile, and then, you know, we can kind of start this conversation. We can really get these, like, preseason speculation. Is there a better time to speculate than, like, before the season starts?
Well, this is, like, the perfect time to be a fan, because mm-hmm. you're full of optimism.
Yeah.
Everything is optimistic as we move forward and look towards the next season. So, yeah, it's a great time to jump on, and again, be that early adapter, and support a fun site. Support a site that's trying to get up and going and improve things. You know, mm-hmm. doing something a little bit different, and the best way to show your support for that is to just jump on and be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. It's cool stuff. I've been really liking it. I did my own Pac-12 coaches power rankings myself. Who would you have as the second best head coach in the Pac-12? Because obviously Shaw. We know him. That's who I had too.
Yeah, it's Shaw. Cool. Yeah, it's definitely Shaw. So yeah, jump on there and let your voice be heard. And the Ducks definitely let their voices be heard last night. This is a team, Colorado Buffaloes, very frisky, very aggressive defensively, definitely not a great offensive performance, not a great shooting performance either for both teams, but a big statement for the Ducks to come through and get that 60-56 closing victory.
Yeah, I mean, going in with, you know, Colorado maybe not having the best offensive performance, this was probably the best defensive performance from this Oregon basketball team that we've seen this year. As far as matchups go, I think early in the game, I really like the zone defense. I think Will Richardson being out there to guard primary ball handlers is making a big difference, and we're kind of seeing Duarte be able to be that wing defender. As you've mentioned before, that's the role that you think he's best at in defense.
Again, let's just get into it now. Let's just do it. Chris Duarte is a great off-ball defender. A mm-hmm. great off-ball defender. He's really good at anticipating, really good at playing angles. He does a great job in the press of knowing and instinctually being in the right place at the right time. He is not a great on-ball defender. He's solid. He can keep a lot of bigger guys in front of him. But once you get a quicker player, I mean, this is somebody that we've seen get cook over and over again early on in the season. He's gotten better. He's playing a little bit more off people. He's using his length a little bit more on some of these smaller players. But I'm not here for this, you know, Chris Duarte is the best defensive player in the Pac-12.
Right. And I think, just to elaborate a little bit on what you're saying, because when you see him play some good on-ball defense, it's not normally bringing, when he's checking the primary ball tender as they're bringing the ball up or initiating the offense. You do see him play pretty good on-ball defense in the corner. You know, as the play, you know, gets into its progression, as things break down, he can play really good situational on-ball defense.
He plays angles mm-hmm. really, really well. He understands what he has around him and uses the court, uses the out-of-bounds lines definitely to his advantage. He's just not, again, and maybe I'm seeing this wrong. I was wrong about Peyton Pritchard going to the NBA about lateral quickness, but he just doesn't seem to have that really fast step going laterally to stay in front of guys. Mm-hmm.
I do like his ability to pick up on the drive. He had a couple good blocks in this game versus Colorado.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I think going
But those blocks are backside blocks. Uh-huh. They're weak side blocks. They're help blocks. There's not a lot. I think I've seen him get one or two where he's guarding the guy all the way through the paint and then rises up and swats his shot. That's not what he's definitely more of the LeBron block, you know, coming from the backside and smacking it up the backboard.
How much did that hurt you to say?
I just threw up a little bit.
I could feel your body just like seize up there.
Just vomited a little bit.
And I mean, and to prove that point, I mean, just look at the scoring output from McKinley Wright between the first game and the second game. Having Will Richardson back to guard that player.
Yes.
And then also the ability to play that three-quarter to full-court press mm-hmm. as well. Where, I mean, Duarte, he is good in the press. I like him out there. I think he's one of the five best players easily.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not saying that.
And he's carried this team at times. This mm-hmm. is not about Chris Duarte slander. This is just... put some respect on my man Will Richardson's name here. And don't forget. I mean, so quickly we forget and we have such crystal blue goggles on for the present moment. I mean, Will Richardson was the guy, again, I believe, leading the Pac-12 in steals last year.
Yes, I believe so.
Now, I mean, I could just be talking out of my you-know-what here.
If he didn't lead, he was top three.
He's definitely up there. And we've seen him be elite as an on-ball defender. And that's a defender that I like a little bit more. That's a guy that's a little bit more versatile. And again, he's still getting to the point where he's trusting his hand. You can see him still a little tentative, but I'm going to call this moment out. This was a big moment for me. Last night at the very end of that game, he's dribbling the ball up the court as the clock's ticking down. He has Duarte up ahead on his right for a push-ahead pass. He keeps it, and he tries to dribble through because he wanted to be the guy to get fouled. Mm-hmm. He took the contact on his hand, stepped up to the free throw line. Now he missed one of those, which I don't like to see.
Well, Duarte missed a couple down the stretch as well.
He wasn't afraid of the moment. Mm-hmm. He wasn't afraid of his body letting him down with some kind of injury. To me, as a coach, that's a big confidence moment. That's a moment you want to see. And him missing one of those free throws now in a game versus Colorado may lead to him making them all in a bigger moment, let's say in March.
Yeah. Or, I mean, in this, there's the upcoming stretch of games to end the season. I mean, we only have 2 weeks left?
Coming up against it. I really hope that they're able to schedule some more games, you know, just to make up for. I mean, but right now, yeah, they've got 5 games left on their schedule.
Yeah, I do, and I kind of don't hope they... I mean, it would be nice to see one of those UCLA games get played, but at the same time, the schedule's already kind of tight as it is. Injuries are already an issue. Like, creating a weird... Well, actually, they barely played. You know, screw
That's
it.
That's what I mean.
I take it back. Never mind.
I'm gonna start this promo right now. Give us Gonzaga.
Why not?
Give us Gonzaga in an exhibition game. Let's go play in Portland.
Well, you know who doesn't want to play that game?
Gonzaga.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, talk about nothing to gain, you know.
Well, that's where, even if the Ducks lose that game, as long as they play with that, because that's a great team.
Oh,
I mean, that's
absolutely.
That's a possibly, you know, once in 10 years kind of great team that Gonzaga has up there this year. I'd love that test. It'd be great to have the Ducks on a national stage like that. Say, give us Gonzaga.
Yeah, and I mean, getting back into Duarte, we talked a lot about what he did defensively, but this game, offensively, he had a phenomenal performance. 18 points on 8 for 13 shooting, only 1 for 4 from deep, which is something that he's kind of relied on as his primary scoring option, and now we're kind of seeing him do a little more dribble penetration, especially off dribble handoffs we saw late in the game last night.
And a lot of off-ball screens. Mm-hmm. They were trying to set him up coming hard off of a single or a double, catching and immediately getting downhill. The other thing that they ran a lot last night, well, two things. They ran that clear out where they hit him and it's like a fake screen and then the two players basically just sprint to the corner and clear it out. But they also went back to Dana's trusted elbow action a couple times last night. We haven't seen that very much, and it's because a lot of these guys, I just don't think, know it yet. They haven't had a chance to practice it yet. But I thought it was really interesting that they went to that while Frank the Tank was in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's definitely between... I mean, one of my game notes, I said... If Lawson is going to set screens, he needs to eventually touch someone. I think Frank Kepnong is definitely the best screener out of the big men. Chandler Lawson, it seems like he's so excited to go for that dive cut that he runs out there and it's almost like a fake screen action. He did set a couple late in the game that I was really happy about. In that kind of the set that you were talking about, it's kind of a variation of horns a little bit with the pin down. Duarte comes up, gets the ball, and then basically goes into a dribble handoff the same direction which he just came off the pin down from. And that's how he got a couple of those layups with Lawson in the game a little bit later. But yeah, I do like Kepnong's ability to actually touch another human being. And defenders, you can tell when they see Frank coming to set the screen, they're a little more aware of it. Like, this is a giant brick wall I'm about to run into.
It's a big
into.
Man.
Yeah.
That's a very, very big man. And yeah, he was playing against another really big dude last night for Colorado.
Yeah, Batty.
Batty,
number
yeah.
21.
Very aggressive, just low center of gravity. Games like that are helpful for big men just to teach them to bend their knees, because if you don't, you're going to get taken out at the knees. And I liked the way that he responded to that kind of physicality. There was a play second half, maybe halfway through, where Frank was just the first guy on the floor, just diving and sacrificing his body. You love to see
that.
Was it in the first half? You love to see that from a big man, just being the first one to the floor and not shying away. And nobody dove on the ground with him.
They did
you
not
notice
want
that?
Any of that
Nobody
smoke.
Nobody wanted that smoke. Nobody wanted that smoke.
Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting. The first subs in the game were Kepnong, and Amari Hardy. I thought that was interesting that the rotation has kind of gone in that way. Mm-hmm. Jalen Terry getting less and less playing time at the backup guard position.
Yeah.
And I think that's for some good reason. I really like what Jalen Terry brings to the game, but so much dancing with the ball.
I would rather see Terry out there than Hardy.
I would too.
I would rather
see
Estrada out there over both of them. Me too. But he must be doing something that pissed Dana off, because he's definitely in his doghouse.
Yeah, we haven't seen him now in a few games.
Him and Locke were just hanging out, playing COD together.
Yeah, like, I don't know if maybe Estrada, maybe it's a conditioning thing post-COVID, or if, like you said, maybe he just, it's just, it's hard to say.
And things can change a little bit now with Eric Williams coming back, but we'll see. You know, mm-hmm. Dana's always tinkering. As John Rothstein says, he aligns Rubik's Cubes. This is what he does. And John Rothstein's really high on the Ducks right mm-hmm. now. He mentioned a couple of them that this is not a 10 seed you want to face.
Right.
You know, this is, I think he said some kind of tweet, like, this is a 4 seed in a 10 seed's body.
Right, yeah. That's a great,
which is a great way to put it. And I would be afraid to see the Ducks right now in March. This is definitely not a team to be trifled with. And Dana's always done this. He's always got in his teams. And we talked about this a month ago. Trust in Dana. Trust in his system. Trust in the development of these players. But Frank playing the way he has and Will Richardson being healthy the way he has, I think, has been the key to this latest uptick in play. And this is going to be tested now going against Utah, a team that's hungry, you know, kind of, you know, slobbering at the mouth here a little bit after just getting their butts kicked basically by the Beavers.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a game like this, I mean, similar to the game that was just played, Colorado coming off a loss against Cal, and we saw them come out of the gates extremely physical. This is something I wanted to get into real quick while we were talking about Batty, big number 21 for Colorado. They were being extremely physical down
low.
I mean, they were coming out, they were looking to throw the first punch, and that punch was going to be a haymaker. Now, how Oregon gets a flop warning after the play where the refs were kind of letting go, and I was here for it. I was like, I like the way that game was officiated. I thought they did a good job letting them play, but then calling it when it hit a certain point. But then you're going to call a flop warning when, I mean, is it a flop if you fall when you absorb contact?
Well, unless, I mean, Chandler Lawson's not a big, thick dude. You know, this isn't Frank taking a shoulder from that guy. And it'll be interesting. Again, Pac-12 refs are always fascinating. But to see how they now officiate a guy like Timmy Allen coming into tomorrow night, because he does like to play physical. He does like to get in there and mix it up with you a little bit. Utah's a physical team. They're going to be angry. So, yeah, it'll be...
drives with his elbows out.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how the Ducks respond to that. Again, with them, hopefully, not looking too far forward to them jumping into the top 25 rankings with this win, I would imagine, on versus Utah, and then having USC, number 17 in the country, on Monday.
Which is going to be a real big test for this team. I mean, this is going to be
huge.
They're going to rely a lot more on Frank Kepnong to play more minutes. I want to see more lineups with him and Lawson together. I think they complement each other really well.
Inside out, they play very well together. Lawson's a good playmaker, and he uses his length well to switch on the perimeter.
But then Lawson, where you kind of want to see more from him, is the physicality. And he is, like, you can tell he's still growing into his body mentally. You don't know if he's unlocked all of the strength that he has, where Frank Kepnong is the opposite, and he's just like, I will physically impose my will on you guys.
It's incredibly impressive that this young man's playing the way that he is when he really should be in high school. I mean, I know it's talked about this a couple times. Okay, the broadcaster again was terrible last night.
It wasn't Bill Walton.
Bill Walton. I would take Bill Walton 100 times out of 100 over those two knuckleheads we had to listen to last night.
Did you catch any of the game before the UCLA Arizona game?
A little bit.
At the end of the broadcast, Bill Walton says, you know what they should do? Push the Final Four back a couple weeks and let these teams finish out their regular season schedule.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So I don't necessarily agree with all of his takes, but I love that he's just a genuine dude who loves this game, who has a microphone in front of him.
That's true.
There's no filter. He started talking about the Daily Wager again on a college basketball game, which you know that the college NCAA does not love.
No, and he was like talking bad about the show. You know who else doesn't love that? ESPN. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy how he gets away with this stuff.
No filter. He just brings it.
All right, and you know, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I like listening to Bill Walton when it's not an Oregon game. When I don't actually care, and when I don't have a ton of information, because I feel like, you know, you and I are pretty educated about this stuff. And then sometimes he'll throw these things out, and you're like, dude, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He'll say something about Eugene Amorari, and you're like, that's not
true. Well, he's an old guy. He gets excited. I guess that's true. He's done some things in his past that maybe his brain's not quite firing the way it should be. Maybe he's seen some things going on that aren't even out there, you know.
You know what they say about flashbacks.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to this Utah game because it's going to be a testament to Dana.
Mm-hmm.
This is a refocus, you know, this team's going to come in hungry. How do you respond? Mm-hmm. And then moving into this USC game, they really need to contain Evan Mobley. That's right. going to mean the Mobley brothers, are really the key that makes USC. But I think I'm going to put it on paper right now. I think Oregon goes 2-0 over these next two games. And I think they beat USC handedly.
I'm not going to go that bold. I think they could definitely hang with USC. I think it's going to take a solid performance from Chandler Lawson, Frank Kepnong, and Eugene Aumarie. I think we're also going to need to see some other players step up. One player that I've been really, really high on that I was a little disappointed with last night was LJ Figueroa. He kind of turned into this spot-up shooter role where he was just like kind of very stationary on offense and just kind of waiting for those kickouts. And as much as I like his outside shooting ability, I don't think it's the thing he should lean on.
He needs to be catch and shoot threes, but if he takes a dribble, it needs to be dribbles into the paint, mm-hmm. not just on the perimeter trying to dance or try to create another three-point opportunity for himself.
Right, and we don't know the specifics of the game plan going into yesterday.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that's the thing. I need more hustle plays from him and more. I actually like him as a spot-up three-point shooter. I think that should be his primary function in this offense. But then when he does get closed out upon, he needs to become a playmaker, which he can do, but he's not a two-dribble, step back and then shoot the three or pull up from the mid-range. It's get to the rim or make a pass.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, as a team yesterday, they shot 23.5% from three, which is, I mean, only 66% from the line, 43.4% from the floor. The numbers weren't, jump off the page as far as shooting the ball, but it's also a bright sign that they were able to win a game while shooting the ball that poorly. Only one player scored off the bench for Oregon yesterday, and that was Frank Kepnong.
I'm gonna bully in here, but I'm not a big Matt Preem fan, but he had a great tweet the other day from Dana, like a quote from him saying, you're gonna have 10 really good games, you're gonna have 10 mediocre games, you're gonna have 10 bad games. Your season's gonna be dependent upon how many of those 10 bad games can you grind out and win. Mm-hmm. That was a bad game for Oregon yesterday, and they ground out against a pretty damn good team and still got the win.
Yeah, and I mean, like I've said before, I think McKinley Wright's the best player in the Pac-12 currently. If I was going to take any player to start my team, I would take him. And I'm not saying that based off potential, because saying best is kind of a weird thing when you're talking about college
basketball. I went to Mobley right away, but then there's a couple other guys in the conference.
Right now, if you got to pick somebody, like if you're going and you got $200 on this game, you're playing white men can't jump style, you got to pull somebody off the bench, I would 100% take McKinley Wright. I think he did. Even the things, like there was a play in the game yesterday where Oregon got an easy bucket late because a player came off the bench and double-teamed somebody, and they did a kick pass, swung it over, and I think LJ or somebody.
Well, a guy coming off the bench would be an infraction. You can't have six guys out on the court.
But I saw the camera that zooms in. McKinley Wright like grabs his jersey and he goes, "We don't do that." And the guy says, no, we don't do that ever. Mm-hmm. And like that kind of leadership, that ability to take over. He had a pretty poor shooting performance in the first half. Still ended up with, I think, 12, 14 points.
He was smothered.
Clutch shots down the stretch. Him and Duarte, there was a nice little 2-minute battle there where they were really going back and forth. So, I mean, that being said, it was good to see them play against a premier player like that and be able to kind of take him out of the game, force the other guys to do things, and I think that's what they're going to have to do against USC as well.
Absolutely. I mean, how do you contain the Mobley brothers is going to be the key to victory. The Ducks then close up the season with games at Stanford, at Cal, and then at Oregon State. So
you win all three of those.
Four games on the road in the Pac-12, which has been a critique of Oregon, is that a lot of their dubs have come at home. It's going to be a testament, again, to Dana to see how they play here on the road finishing out the season. I think the Ducks go 4-1 here in these next five games. I'd love to see them go 5-0. That'd be phenomenal. I see that Stanford game as a possible drop, even that Cal game as a possible drop, and then finishing out strong and beating the Beavers. But lots of great basketball still here to come. Pac-12 tournament, we hope.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're planning on it, but we'll see. All it's going to take is, a couple outbreaks to shut that down. But, I mean, I've told you before, I think the Pac-12 tournament, I think conference tournaments as a whole are kind of stupid.
Yeah, okay, a different conversation for a different day, but I don't disagree with you in a fiery way, but yeah. I think there is a level of necessity to it just to bring in money for the conference.
I think it's like, you know, conference tournament's really important for those teams like, you know, Stanford or Cal that can make a run, and like that's how they get into the tournament. When you look at a team like Oregon, like what do you really got to play?
But how many years has Oregon been that team and made the run in the tournament?
That's what I'm saying. It's cool for like the teams that aren't the best team in the conference.
Mm-hmm. You're saying this year specifically.
No, I'm
because
saying
because it caters
whole.
To Oregon.
Sure, yeah, cool. Put it that way. That's exactly what I'm saying, pretty much. Yeah.
I love it. So let's go ahead and jump over here to the women's side. I think we've kind of exhausted the men's here for now. But yeah, women coming off a really tough loss to Stanford a couple days ago, and they've got UCLA coming up here in just a couple hours, actually. So what are some of the keys to the game here that you see for the Ducks tonight?
Well, so, I mean, let's look back to January 3rd, the first time that Oregon played UCLA, where Oregon lost by 2 points, 73-71. Tina Paopao, one of her best games of the year, 19 points, 8 for 14 shooting, and 3 for 6 from deep. Niara Sobley had a pretty good performance, 12 points, 8 rebounds, a couple blocks, and a steal. And then Aaron Boley had a solid performance, and this is a player that I kind of want to key in on from the Stanford game and then moving forward, where she, against UCLA, had 10 points, 4 for 10 from the field, but 1 for 6 from deep. So all those misses coming basically from long range. So I think Aaron Boley kind of, you know, this last game, this might have been, that might have been the opportunity for her to kind of kickstart things again. This has been a year to forget for her so far. I think being kind of put in that primary scoring position isn't exactly the most catered to her game thing, although she is a great player. We saw her as the secondary scorer for the last few years, you know, around Satu Sabale and Sabrina Ionescu. And I think now that she's been leaned on, we've kind of seen, and she's been called to the post a lot more often, which before she's kind of been more of the corner shooter. But I mean, between Boley, Mike Sell, and Tina Paopao in this last game against Stanford, they all combined for 6 for 11 from three. So we're kind of seeing the cold shooting kind of begin, the ice starting to melt a little bit on some of the cold shooting.
Well, and I think a big reason for that is the shot quality's gone up. These aren't, leaning threes like we've talked about in the past. They're better shots because they're coming off of dribble penetration. They're coming off of better screens. There's a lot of little things that go into getting these shooters freed up. And it's also, you just see a little better cohesion and trust within the offense. Again, we saw a couple backdoor cuts here against the Stanford Cardinal to free other players up. It's that moment as a player that, okay, I'm not going to get the ball right now, but what can I do to still work really hard to get a teammate open? Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that come out a little bit more as some of these five-star freshmen begin to understand they need to be role players. And that's only something that's going to come with time and polish, mm-hmm. because they need to find their moments where they can shine as a role player to still feel comfortable working so hard. Otherwise, I mean, we've all been out there as a basketball player where you might be working really, really hard and then you haven't touched the ball in 5 or 6 possessions. All of a sudden you're not cutting hard. You're not setting the screen. You're just kind of sitting in the corner. You're not sprinting back on defense anymore. It just begins to affect your overall play. That's why they always say, you know, the ball has an energy. Everybody's mm-hmm. got to touch the basketball. I think the biggest key for this, for the Ducks here moving forward, is I've always butchered her name, but how Mikasel continues to play here. Mikasel.
I think it's Mikasel.
I always get it
close
wrong.
Close enough.
I always get it wrong. And again, we try. We're semi-professional amateur podcasters here. We do our best. But yeah, her and Boley combined, if they can continue to shoot over 40% from three, I think this is a Duck team that can really make some noise again down the stretch. Some opportunities are still here. Oregon State's still a really good team. But this game today is the opportunity to still really make that statement and to possibly jump back into a 3 or maybe even a 2 seed.
Mm. And a lot of, you know, in a 2-point loss against a good UCLA team, they just need to kind of tighten some things. In that first matchup, they were out-rebounded 35-33. So close, but you'd want to see Oregon win that matchup. A little bit of a size advantage when they do have Sedona Prince out there as the 5 with Niara Sobley. And then also in the last game, it was 14 turnovers to 11 assists. They only shot 31.8% from 3, 46.4% from the field, and 80% from the charity stripe on 15 attempts. So they got to the line, and they did a lot of good things, but you just want to see some, you know, more assists and turnovers, especially with a team that's built like this. Not a lot of great shooters off the dribble. Taylor Mike sells probably the best with Tahina Pau Pau, probably being second when she does.
Off the dribble, I think Pau Pau is better than Mike Sell.
Yeah, I think you might be right. But you just, I guess you see less of it from Pau Pau. She's more hesitant to do it. At times, I feel like she does it when they're losing. When
she throws the cape on a little bit and mm-hmm. tries to bring people. Yeah, she reminds me so much of Dame. She reminds me so much of Damian Lillard, the way that she plays, where she tries early on in the game to get her teammates involved, to make the right pass, to drive and to absorb contact, to be able to get her other teammates open. But then, yeah, late in the game, when it's winning time, when it's pow pow time, she really does try to take over.
Yeah, I mean, she did, like, in this last game, Oregon loses 63-61 to Stanford. Tahina Pau Pau has the ball, end of the game. Go time. It's time to go and, you know, tie this one up, take the lead, do what you're going to do, and a travel.
She fell over. She fell over.
Yeah, on a spot that she did slip earlier, which was kind of weird, and she rolled her ankle. Everybody's been there. You plant that foot, you put a little more weight on it than you think, and when it gives out on you, what do? There's nothing you can do.
That also is a byproduct of you being out of control and trying Absolutely. A little bit too hard. And I think she acknowledged it. She was great. She came out on Twitter and said, you know, I need to be better in these moments. I will be better in these. It was like very Tebow-esque mm-hmm. when Florida lost, and he's like, oh, we need to be better. But yeah, I think that this will be a moment that she'll learn from, and especially for to happen in a big game in a big moment is that much better for her learning curve.
Right. And it was a weird game with 127 jump balls and 432 travel calls.
Really weird game. Really. And you're not even exaggerating. I think we set a record for jump balls.
But as a team, shooting 47.6% from deep, that's a huge improvement. And that's kind of what this team needs to be able to do to hang with these top tier programs. I mean, you're talking about UCLA, Stanford. These are teams that can compete to be in the top five in the country. Stanford at one time was number one, and I think they're better than they were when they were ranked number one. Mm-hmm. I think Cameron Brink is a player that the first couple times I saw her play, I was like, okay, raw potential. This last time, like, she's like Kristaps Porzingis. She's
nice. I wish I knew more. I had some birdies, you know, when her recruiting stuff was going on. But I wish I knew more about why she didn't really put a lot of interest in coming to Oregon. And it didn't seem to be a lot of interest, you know, from the other side either. From my little birdies. Again, I don't know what the narrative was in the greater media about why she didn't want to come to Oregon. But it's she's one that got away. Well, she's definitely one that got away.
Stanford was in more of a position with the young talent they already had to kind of hone in on one player.
Well, and for her to be one of their best players. You know, Oregon had all of these freshmen mm-hmm. coming in. And sometimes we forget that these are young women. There are things that happen, personalities at play here, where sometimes you played against a girl at an AAU tournament and you don't want to go be your teammate. Yeah. You know, sometimes there's a bad taste in your mouth from playing against somebody in a different environment, or there's a coaching thing where you're just not vibing with that program. There's a lot of things that go into play here from behind the scenes.
And she is from Oregon, but I think they mentioned during the broadcast that she's like Steph Curry's god sister.
A lot of Bay Area connections.
Yeah, Bay Area connection. And then, like, one thing that we can't overlook, it's Stanford. You know what I mean? Like, it's Ivy League West Coast.
It is still Stanford. Blah, yeah. blah, blah.
I know, but I mean, there is value in that. I mean, you know.
Is there a worse mascot in sports?
Oof. I mean, oof. Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Is there a worse? I really don't think there is. The Cardinal is the worst mascot in
sports.
And
then their mascot is a tree, which, I don't know.
But, well, yeah, I guess that's the thing. Is it mascot or is it name? It's like right. the worst team name.
Yeah.
What's a Cardinal?
Because it's weird, like Alabama, it's like the Crimson Tide, and then their mascot's an elephant.
Which is also terrible.
So getting back to it. In the first matchup against UCLA, defensively for Oregon. Now, they scored, let's see, UCLA scored 73 points. Michelle Onuyiri finished with 33 points on 12 for 20 shooting, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. And Charisma Osborne, sorry if that's not your first name.
Charisma, I bet.
Charisma. Yeah, it's spelled
Charisma.
Pretty strange. Yeah, Charisma. Charisma, maybe. I think that's actually right. Charisma Osborne with 22 points on 7 for 14 shooting, 2 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. So over half the scoring, over 70% of the scoring coming from two players. So, I mean, that's something that this Oregon team can really hone in on and figure out how to take out these, you know, big time scorers in women's college basketball, because when it comes to tournament time, there are some teams out there that have some dogs that they are going to need to be able to at least contain if they do happen. I mean, depending on where... Cause, I mean, that is the thing. Like, with both of these Oregon teams, they might be better teams than they're going to be seeded. I mean, they're projected as a 3 seed right now.
I agree with that.
But, I mean, it really depends. The downfall there becomes in you can get in the wrong bracket, and you could run into a Louisville, a South Carolina, or a UConn a little bit earlier than you think you will.
Ooh, Paige versus Pow Pow.
I know.
I want to see it. Okay, I'm going to put your feet to the fire here. Give me a prediction for tonight's game.
I think that we're going to see Oregon come out with a victory tonight. Big surprise coming from us, right? Homers. But I'm going to say this one's going to be a little bit more knockdown, drag out. I think that Oregon's defense is better than the first time they played. I think UCLA is also a very good defensive team. So I think I'm going to go 61-67. Oregon hits some free throws towards the end there and runs away with it. I think that... Niara Sabali is going to have a solid game. I think she's going to do a lot of what she always does. And I'm expecting kind of a bounce back game from Sedona Prince, who had a weird game against Stanford. She did a lot of really good things, hit her first career three-pointer, but picked up some cheap fouls. A lot of it was just gaining position in the block. She picked up two real quick, and that kind of forced her out. We saw a lot more of Lydia Giomi from that, who played a great game. In my opinion, probably her best game as a Duck.
I'm surprised it took us 34 minutes into the podcast for us to get a Lydia Giomi.
The effort level that she put out there, she was playing physical. She made some great reads. She got really aggressive with the ball in the post, which is something I've been waiting for so long from you, Lydia. But I think that Sedona is going to – she saw that, and she's going to want to have that performance herself. I think maybe she's going to try and draw a couple more fouls. And then I'm also going to predict that Aaron Bulley hits 2 threes.
Okay, I like it. I'm with you. I think this is a game that they're not all upperclassmen per se, with Sedona kind of being on that edge there.
Right.
I think they all step up and have a big game. I want to be the anti-homer here and pick a Bruin victory, because I do think that in the last game we saw just a physicality from the Bruins, and just every team that plays the Ducks this year just wishes they were still playing against Sabrina Ionescu. Mm-hmm. That is, they're bringing a certain fire. That's something we talked about last year that this team needed to be ready for. Mm-hmm. We don't have our notes to go back and find that exact clip, but I guarantee we talked about that. I think this is I think it's a Duck victory. I think it's a high-scoring game. I think it's a higher-scoring game even than the last game. I think Ducks win this 82-75.
So remember, in this first matchup, no UCLA Bruins scored more than 5 points besides the two players that I mentioned before.
Yep, I think they go off again. I think it's a slobber knocker. I think this is like a Mike Cassell Bowley versus, you know, the two Bruins kind of just going back and forth. I do think that the freshmen continue to struggle a little bit, but I think that the upperclassmen kind of lead the way here for the younger Flocklings.
It's so funny. I noticed this listening to some of our older podcasts. It's funny how, and it probably is because of how we played basketball and stuff, you always focus more in on the guards,
yep,
and I always do the bigs.
Every time.
Yeah.
And that's why we complement each other well. And I think with football also, we see the game in a very interesting way from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I mean... There's a reason why we are podcast partners. You know what I mean? I think it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, big game tonight again, 5:00. That's got to be. I didn't look to see what it's on.
Pac-12 Network.
Is it Pac-12 Network?
Yes, sir.
All right, you looked. Oh, you wrote it on the board. It was on the board, and I didn't even see it. My goodness. Well, with that, we obviously need to take a quick break and recharge.
Lost a few games. We'll be right. Tough. That was District 5. Now we're the Ducks.
Yeah.
And the Ducks. Yeah. Are undefeated.
All right. Yeah.
Quack, 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 quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack,
quack, quack, quack,
quack,
quack,
quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack,
quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack, quack. I remember one of the first Mortal Kombat movies. I was a kid, like young, and I was in like a Target or something, and they played the trailer for it on like one of the model TVs, and it like fucking gave me nightmares. It was the scene with the fucking, like, get over here guy when they're in the woods. Yeah. And he, like, shoots his little, like, snake thing, and then it ends up being, like, right at the guy's face.
Bro, you've got to watch the new trailer. Like, I'm tempted to, like, pause this right now and pull it up and show it. It's really, really good. Okay, we are back. We're back from break. We're going to cover a few more things. I just snuck one in there on Shane. We got some soccer coming up, some track and field. We'll cover a little bit of the NBA for the Pro Ducks, and then we'll wrap it up and get on out of here. I'm going to do my best to get this baby edited and thrown out before the women's game to give you a chance to listen to it. But if not, you'll know that, again, we're recording about, it's about 2 o'clock now. We're running a little bit long today, but that's okay. Shane, soccer. What do you got, man?
Soccer.
Women's all right.
So the women's soccer team, because there is no men's soccer team, won their season opener 1-0 versus Gonzaga last week. It was the first game in 15 months for UO soccer. Can you believe that? Allie Cook scored her 6th career goal in that lone goal scored, and Leah Freeman becomes the first freshman goalkeeper to win a season opener since 2005. This season, Oregon is returning 4 of their 5 top goal scorers, the lead goal scorer being Jordan Wormdahl, who scored 7 last season.
North Eugene native, mm-hmm. Jordan Wormdahl. Love the local product playing so well.
Oregon also adds transfer Lexi Romero from Air Force, the reigning Mountain West Player of the Year, who scored 14 goals last season.
Every time I think of Air Force women's soccer, wasn't it they were playing against BYU and that girl like grabbed them mm-hmm. by the... Yeah.
And then sometimes I was thinking, like, how do you transfer from Air Force? Like, do you go like AWOL? Oh. Like, I don't understand how that works. Anyways,
great question.
Not only Lexi Romero, but they also added freshman Callan Harrington from Jesuit High.
Another local product.
The top goal scorer in Oregon high school history. Scored 133 goals in her 4 years at Jesuit. Broke Hall of Fame Tiffany Milbert's record.
Well, and this is a first-year coach, Graham Abel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a big season for him to really put his stamp on the program.
The 5th coach in the last, like, 8 years or something.
There's been quite a bit of turnover, yes. Quite a bit of turnover.
Yeah, so they are playing in about an hour here. They're facing off at Sacramento State. So, you know, this young soccer season is off to a good start here. And with returning a lot of good players, adding a transfer, big time local freshman product, there's a lot to be seen from this Oregon team.
Well, and to have the freshman, and then you've got, I mean, Jordan Wormdahl, kind of the junior, returning on this team, being local from Eugene, you would hope you'd get a little bit of pub. So yeah, I don't know. They're probably not televising these games, unfortunately. You know, it's hard to find that. I wish Go Ducks had a better setup to just stream every single varsity contest. What a concept!
Right.
But well, yeah, we're not here to debate that.
With the incoming head honcho in the Pac-12 conference is something we talked about, you know, potentially signing somebody who has more TV experience to kind of get things like that going.
Set up for all the absolutely.
Would be really cool. And then again, you know, in a non-COVID world, this is a really fun thing to go down, check them out. I mean, you don't really got to pay to get in. You can kind of just go and watch. And something that I was really excited about doing for, like, Duck News and stuff last season, but didn't really get the opportunity with the COVIDs.
One of my first forays into any kind of, you know, media work at all was covering women's soccer for DuckNews.com. And it was great. Got to go to the games, interviewed the coach afterward, interviewed a couple players. It taught me a lot about the process mm-hmm. and, you know, access and the social norms and
seeing
kind of in that.
Seeing how the sausage is made.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. It was a lot of fun, and those games are great. It's a beautiful stadium.
Mm-hmm.
The Ducks did a great job with just the creation of that kind of athletic park over there now, especially with the baseball stadium being right next door also.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I hope that we have an opportunity to return to these beautiful stadiums and this opportunity to actually, like, watch sports with other people
right.
and enjoy it. It'd be fun.
Like, this would have been a great opportunity for you and I to go down, watch
we'd
some
be
soccer.
There.
And
well,
then
I mean,
go.
This one's down in California, but yes.
Well, yeah.
If we could, we definitely would be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and then, you know, having a women's basketball game afterwards, stuff
absolutely.
Like that. We'll get back to it eventually. It'll be a lot of fun.
Fingers
and,
crossed.
Know, what we're talking about, look out for pretty soon my love piece on Frank Kepnon coming out on Duck News.
DuckNews.com
soon. Just, you know, a lot of more of me just oohing and aahing about how much I like his game. So if you don't get enough of that here, go check that out there. But, you know, going from soccer over soccer, to soccer, the track. Soccer over to the track.
Soccer over to the track.
Soccer over to the track.
A on your left.
Uh-huh, on my left. Got it. Don't say it. Don't you say it.
On your left.
Come on!
I just want to highlight somebody who's been an absolute terror this season so far. Cooper Tare, the senior, a former cross-country freshman of the year at Oregon. His career is really coming full circle now as a senior. Oregon has competed in two events this season, and they've set collegiate records in both of them. Last Friday, down in the Tyson Invitational in Arkansas, Cooper Tare set the college record for the mile time at 3 minutes 50.39 seconds, beating the previous record of 3 minutes 52.01 seconds.
That's fast.
That is 2 seconds faster than the old world record, too.
That's very fast.
Not world record, sorry, collegiate record.
Speed.
That former record was held by Oregon's own Edward Cheserek, who set that mark in 2017. Cole Hawker also would have broke that said record, but finished second in this mile, which is crazy.
Man, that sucks.
Right? Like,
you're like the trailing guy. Like, I mean, you're happy for your teammate and all that, but you know there was a point like that night where he's sitting in his dorm like playing video games like, damn it.
Yeah, like I broke the collegiate world record, but I don't hold the world record.
Don't even get to hold it. That's not even something you can really call your mom about and tell her, like, I got second, mom.
Yeah, which is, but I mean, that kind of goes into the whole, you know, competition breeding competition.
Hey, if you're not first, you're last.
Those guys pushing each other to both break that mark. And you think maybe he wouldn't have broken that mark had his teammate not been, you know, that step in front of him.
Nobody wants to be the shake to the other person's bake.
Absolutely. So those times rank 7th and 8th in world all-time performance list. So if you want to look at the world record, those are both in the top 10.
So that's still cool. I mean, you're still top 10 in the fastest times that have ever been recorded for this event.
For
so, I mean, you're still feeling, yeah, you're still feeling pretty good about yourself.
Yeah, but there is that just
they've been
little,
running for a long time.
That like, little sliver, Greek. Like you said, he's sitting there playing like COD, and he's like, damn it, Cooper.
Like, out of nowhere, just like, or like he just wants to play against Cooper so he can go kill him like down in the grotto or
they're
something.
They're on the same team. Cooper gets one more kill than him. He's like, oh.
Again? Why does this keep happening, man?
Cooper went on to run his personal record in the 800 meter the next day at the same Invitational in a minute 49.29. Also has... two of those times, that 800, the mile time, and his anchor on the distance medley relay. Why do I struggle with that?
That's
so
a mouthful,
much?
Man. It really is a mouthful.
Are all three leading NCAA marks. Boom. Finally said it.
Boom. Got it out. I mean, this track and field program, I mean, obviously is a dynasty and is obviously the creme de la creme nationally. But this year in particular, really out there dominating and letting it be known that Oregon track is back.
Yeah. And as somebody I've recently really gotten into, especially distance running, and I've seen some of these guys out there. It's crazy. Like, I've played basketball with, like, Malik Harrison and Bryce Taylor, and, like, seeing that level of, like, what it is to be, like, a guy like me versus, like, a stud D1 NBA fringe guy. They both played the NBA, but not for a very long time. I think I'm more impressed seeing these guys just run around the Amazon Trail. Like, if you ever stood, like, in the ocean and the tide goes out and you feel like you're moving backwards, that's how it is running behind these dudes. Like, I'm like, am I actually moving right now? Like, I have to look around to make sure that I'm actually propelling my body forward and I'm not just, like actually, like, in quicksand or something.
No, it's the constant on your left from Captain America. Yeah, absolutely.
It's just crazy.
Well, you wouldn't know that because you don't watch Marvel movies.
I just haven't seen Endgame,
How have we become this friend for that? I'm so disappointed. Like, oh, man.
You know, with movies that are really, like, CGI heavy, I often fall asleep.
I'm going to, like, lock you in here and make you watch it on the TV. Like, that is just absolutely crazy.
I saw Guardians of the Galaxy twice in the theater, fell asleep both times. I know. Weird, right?
Say to you right now. So yeah, lots to still come here with track and field, so go check them out. Go follow them on Twitter. Go try to give them a little bit of pub. Give them some love. Definitely. Again, it's one of these staple programs here for the University of Oregon.
And I mean, they're absolutely slaying. I mean, when you look at those, to beat a collegiate record by 2 seconds in a mile, like, that is unbelievable.
It's insane. It's almost as insane as Peyton Pritchard going 50-40-90 in the NBA.
Yeah.
And yeah. he's close to that right now, still.
I think, yeah, but last I checked, he was like a half percentage out of field goal. But he's
Excuse me, 8 mile, not Peyton Pritchard, 8 mile.
But I think he's shooting like 92, 93% from the charity stripe. It's
preposterous. And the Celtics really are leaning on him heavily.
They actually need him. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, Jaylen Brown, it's weird. They kind of remind me of like the Blazers East a little bit. Where, you know, you have like Dame and CJ, and then you have Jaylen Brown and Tatum, and so much is reliant on those two propelling the team, which makes what Dame is doing right now even more. I mean,
we'll get into that.
Just crazy. We'll get
again, it's you got to watch the games. You can't just look at stats. And I get into this with Duck fans too. It's like you actually have to watch the games, watch for the beats, watch for the different rhythms, watch for the way that they interact with each other and their teammates, and watch the way they interact with the other team. Mm-hmm. There's a respect level that you can learn about there also. And I get so frustrated having internet conversations is frustrating to begin with. But even when we could have like bar conversations, it's the same concept. It's the fan that, you know, sees a stat go across his Twitter feed from ESPN and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden that becomes gospel to them. So I understand why people, and again, Luka is the new hotness, mm-hmm. you know, his skin complexion reminds a lot of other people of their own skin reflection that seem to have this take, which is funny to me.
This guy's a lot like Larry Bird.
But to say that Luka is more deserving of an All-Star game bid this year over Dame is blasphemous, and the media and the players represented that. And that's where I'll gain a little bit of solace. And just now knowing that this is going to piss Dame off.
That was some like some awesome like Twitter silver lining. I think I retweeted it out where I was like, you know, that actually, because we've seen when Dame is motivated, he's a different monster.
He's already motivated. He literally has Enes Kanter starting mm-hmm. and playing well.
And then people being like, they should play Harry Giles more.
I mean, what this man is doing from a motivational perspective and just elevating the entire tide for all of these other players that he has around him. I mean, there was a great image last night of him grabbing Rocco and Derek Jones Jr. like you were kind of talking about with McKinley Wright, just like, hey, this is what we're doing right now. It's like right at the end of that game against the Pelicans, and it's just that leadership, that his ability for an entire community, for the Portland, the Northwest community, just to lean on him. It's incredibly impressive that he comes in, night out, and he has performances like the ones he's had against the Pelicans, like he's had against the Bulls, and those aren't games that are going to necessarily that matter, really. I mean, they matter for the Blazers right now because every game matters.
Right.
But for a lot of superstars, those are games that they just take a night off.
Mm-hmm.
And Dame doesn't take a night off.
And part of it, there is like some media bias there with the Blazers only have 5 nationally broadcast games this season.
Absolutely. So, I mean, and Luka's on TV almost every single night.
Which is stupid because the Mavs are really hard to watch.
But it's Luka. And yeah. I love Luka. I'm a huge Luka fan. I own him in every fantasy league that I can possibly have. I'm a huge Luka fan. He himself has come out and said, hey, I'm not in the best shape this year.
Yeah, he's playing himself into shape. He's like, I thought we were starting in March or whatever it was.
I was hanging out on the beach and I'm still trying to get myself ready to go. And I mean, for a guy that came in with MVP hype, for the Mavericks to come in with like all this contender hype and oh, they're going to be the next big thing and blah, blah, blah. And for them to be playing like they are, yes, are his stats on paper better? Absolutely.
Kind of.
I can get even hotter than this. I think Dame is playing better than Steph Curry right now.
I think Dame, I mean, if I had a vote, which I don't, for MVP, Dame would have mine right now. I also wouldn't be able to have a vote because I gamble on it, and I do have some money on Dame Lillard to win MVP, so I'm going to be even more upset about this in a couple months.
You're the guy who streaked at the Super Bowl and bet on a streaker to be at the Super Bowl, so you made it worthwhile. But yeah, the Dame slander is gone, and again, I'm watching a lot of this through red and black glasses. I understand that, or pinwheel glasses, whatever you want to call it. I'm a huge Blazers fan and a huge Dame fan, but I'm also watching almost every second of Blazer basketball. Mm-hmm. I'm watching a lot of Warriors games. I'm watching a lot of Mavericks games. I'm watching a ton of basketball, and seeing it through that filter, you understand, again, just the beats and rhythms that make up a great player as opposed to just a really, really good player.
Who would be your top 3 MVPs?
MVP right now?
I'll tell you mine while you're thinking. I'd go Dame, LeBron, Jokic.
Interesting. That's actually really interesting.
It's hard. I know. I'm putting you on the spot, and this, you always hate when I do this. But
I do it to you all the time, so it's only fair. It's only fair. And this
that's
is
why I don't feel bad.
Yeah, I'm gonna go a little outside the box here, and go Embiid, Dame. That third spot's really, really tough.
Jokic is almost averaging a triple-double.
I love Jokic. I just don't think the Nuggets are playing well enough. I'm going to jump on this John Hollinger take. I don't know if you heard this the other day. I can't believe I'm going to say that. I'm going to go Rudy Gobert. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going Rudy Gobert. Whatever. The Utah Jazz are playing out of their minds and their entire system.
So now we know why Justin doesn't have a vote.
Shane's ready to leave.
He was but, mad. I mean, I haven't seen Endgame. He's like Rudy Gobert for an MVP.
I said he should be third in voting, and then I would go LeBron, and then I would, I mean, there's a couple other guys that would go after that. But I think that just the way that the entire system that the Jazz are running revolves around Gobert makes him valuable.
Yeah, he's only the second best player on his own team, but whatever.
I think he's the best player on his own team right now. I don't think Donovan Mitchell's playing very well.
I was talking about Joe Ingles.
Well played. Well played. I think that's the perfect place to pretty much wrap up today's pod. If you're all out there still listening, please go check us out at The Flock Pod on your major social media and streaming platforms for podcasts. We don't ask for this very often. Please give us a like. Give us a rating. We are trying to raise ourselves up and get some more listeners. So again, if you're listening to us on Apple specifically, if you could jump in there and give us some ratings, give us some shares, we'd really appreciate it. Tell a friend about us, tell your mom about us. I mean, who knows, you know, you didn't, I mean, moms, we seem to be popular with the moms.
It's yeah, that's our main key demographic.
I'm good with it. I'm 100% good with it. So as always, thank you, love you, thank you, love you, thank you, love you.
Sorry.
Do you want to dance?
Huh?
Do you want to dance?
Yeah.
You know you make me wanna shout. Kick my heels up and shout. Throw my hands up and shout. Throw my head back and shout. Come on now. Don't forget to say you real. Don't forget to say
you've been so good to me. You know you make me wanna shout, lift my head up and shout, throw my hands back and shout. Come on now, shout. Come on now, shout. Come on now, shout. Come on now, shout. Take it easy, shout. Take it easy, shout. Take it easy, shout. Take it easy, shout. A little bit softer now, 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 shout. A little bit louder now, shout.